Next week, we'll bring a kind of a milestone to the American political discussion, kind of an early one. The Democrats will be holding their first two presidential candidate debates. It'll be spread out over two nights because there are so many people running. But there's a lot more to this developing story, and it starts with the voters. Our contributing editor, Neil Milner, has been looking at some research that puts some of the politics in a different light, and he joins us this morning for the long view. And Neil, what you've been looking at goes beyond the horse race aspect of simply looking at how different candidates are doing with support.
Yes, I'm looking at one study in particular, and then we'll talk about another one that looks more at what the voters are thinking about, particularly in regard to how they see the economy. And the big study is done by the Democracy Fund's Voter Study Group, which has a sample, it's a nonpartisan operation, sample of 7,000 voters, which is even more than the number of candidates that we have running for office.
That's a pretty sizable sample.
Very big sample. And it lets them do some very different things. So they look at how voters think about the economy, not just whether they think it's getting better or worse, but various other things, and look at political parties. So what they find out at this stage, and this is why it's important, because at this stage the notion of who's going to get the Democratic nomination is much more fluid, much harder to discover. Many things can happen. The voters' views about the economy, and particularly their narratives about why people are poor and why people are rich, is a much more stable factor. And we know that the economy is an important factor in determining how people vote. An important, not the important.
Sure.
We'll get back to that. So they find a couple of interesting things. One of the things they find is that Democratic voters are much more unified on economic policies than Republicans. Democratic voters, all the way from people making not much money, $40,000, to people making $200,000, maybe even more, tend to share the same approval of progressive economic policies, a higher minimum wage, more medical care, all those kinds of things. Republicans are more split. There's a group of Republicans, if you look at how they see the thing, a heavy majority of the Republicans take a more conservative position, the traditional Republican position. But 20% of Republicans voters, and they tend to be poorer, take a position on the economy that's much closer to the Democratic position of the Democratic voters than the Republicans. So they're much less unified, and the unity breaks down according to social class and income. So that's the first fundamental thing that they find before we even get into the question of how they think about the stories they tell about economics and what difference that makes.
And interesting, by the way, that split comes at the lower end of the income scale.
Yes, it does. And that shouldn't be too surprising, because there was certainly some of that in the 2016 presidential race. It wasn't just about very poor people, but the switchers tended to be people who were not as well off. The overwhelming number of Republicans voted for Trump. You had these switchers who switched over. So when you look at stories, how do people describe the economy? They ask them the value of wealthy people, why some people are poor, some people are rich. Democrats are very unified in talking about structural factors to some extent outside the control of individuals. Republicans tell a story that emphasizes individual willfulness, individual initiative, and so on. Again, though, you find Republicans more split on this than Democrats. And so when you look at these kind of narratives, what they also find is if you look at how these people vote and how they say they would be likely to vote in 2020, when you compare, you take a generic Democrat, they just say a Democratic candidate, a Republican candidate, Trump, and undecided, your view of economic policies tends to be consistent with whether you vote Democratic or Republican. But here's that little shift again. You have the percentage of Republicans who take on a kind of left-wing story, the progressive economic story. There is a larger portion of those that switch over than Democrats. take on a Republican story. So there's that. So that's the kind of context to think about the bigger issue in the 2020 campaign about the economy, which is it really the economy stupid?
Right, from the famous Clinton line.
And the answer is sometimes yeah and sometimes no, but that's what we can talk about.
But it's also that idea of creating a narrative around that. And it,
yes.
I mean, that makes me go back a lot further than Clinton. It was, I think it was 1928 in Hoover's campaign of a chicken in every pot.
Yes.
Think in later years, Reagan's reelection and it's mourning in America. I mean, again, thematic
or ideas. Or the welfare queen story.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I mean, they intuited what we now know scientifically, and that is that people conceptualize their world through narratives mm-hmm. and through stories. And so it's not surprising that people have these kind of narratives about why people are rich, why people are poor, what's the value of wealthy people, in addition to the kind of surfacey question about do you think the economy is good or bad, or is it getting worse or is it getting better? What you find, though, that's different this time, we think, is the relationship is Donald Trump.
Mm.
Okay, because what you have now, when you look at the role of the economy in the 2020 election, is you have an economy that, by lots of indications, is doing very well. Certainly well enough so under normal circumstances that would score a lot of points in favor of an incumbent president. But at the same time, you have a president who has historically low approval ratings. And so you really have – so if you look at forecasting models about who's going to win 2020, and these things are pretty good.
Mm.
They're not infallible, but they're pretty good. The models that emphasize the economic fundamentals
mm-hmm.
Have Trump winning. The models that emphasize political fundamentals have Trump losing.
Political fundamentals being basically approval.
That's certainly one of the ratings. Mm. And certainly at the center of an economic fundamental is the economy, the unemployment rate,
sure,
whatever.
GDP.
Okay. So what you really have that you're going to see, and the candidates and the Democratic Party sort of reflects this, is you've got these two poles to deal with here. How much of it do you want to emphasize the economy?
Hmm.
And the Republicans are after Trump all the time to say more about the economy, probably because they think the economy is strong, and also because Trump gets himself, you know, wanders away when he and says things that a lot of Republicans would prefer him not to say. Now, there's an interesting poll that was just done by a very reputable operation in Wisconsin that tried to look more closely at how these two things are playing out. And Wisconsin is a bellwether state. Wisconsin was a state that surprisingly went for Trump. It's a highly partisan state. It's very partisan in the sense that it's an even state, but
mm-hmm.
It goes back and forth. So what you found in that poll is that most of the time when you poll people about the presidential races, the president's approval rating, Obama's as an example here, is very highly correlated with what people think about the economy.
Right.
Trump is very different. There's a huge disparity between approval rating for Trump, which is relatively low, the economy, which is relatively high. So that, again, suggests that you have a very special situation here where you have a candidate who is has a strong base but who is unpopular in lots of ways.
So, again, I might say at that point you're back on both sides to that creation of the narrative. Tell me a
yes.
story.
Oh, yeah.
What is the story that's going to pull this together, either from the GOP side in terms of in favor and unifying this, or from the Democrats' side as well to pull together the story that pulls that down?
I think that's right. Let's talk about the Democratic side for a second because of those debates coming up.
Hmm.
Listen to see the extent to which they talk about each of those. Joe Biden spends a lot of time when he's doing it really going after Trump. But most of these other candidates, and I think Biden is like that too, listen for the balance. Listen to the extent to which they're talking about a fairer economy, a better economy, and listen to the extent to which they attack Trump for his character and so on. And I think the Democrats are really feeling their way into this. And in fact, so are the Republicans, because Trump is in many ways a one-off. Even for the Republicans who voted for him, he's a different kind of candidate who poses certain kind of dangers for the Republicans also. But I think that's a way, if you're going to listen to all these people talk for two consecutive days, that's one of the filters you can use.
Look for the nuance in the political dialogue.
Oh,
all right,
God,
thanks,
nuance.
Neil.
Yes, you're welcome.
Good luck with that.
Yes.
Neil Milner is retired professor of political science at UH Manoa and joins us regularly with his thoughts on the long view.